A community orchestra can be a point of significant local pride. Pride on the part of the community, as well as for the musicians on the board. Music has the capacity to enrich a community and to bring a community together through shared experiences of being moved and changed by the melodies they hear. Music gives us inspiration, hope, joy, and propels us to explore and wonder. Local symphonies have an enormous impact on their communities and can inspire a future generation of musicians in the process. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seewert. Today we go behind the scenes at three area symphonies that have been entertaining audiences in their communities for decades. We'll hear from two conductors as well as an executive director who can talk about what it's like to put together these incredible programs and what it feels like to make music on stages across the region. Nobu Yasuda is the conductor of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra, which performs for audiences in Eau Claire and throughout the Chippewa Valley. Nobu, welcome to Route 51. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came into this role.
Yeah, actually, I mean, originally I came from Japan. I play violin. And then I was actually teaching violin at the University Wisconsin Eau Claire until last year. I just retired from my violin teaching because violin teaching and also performing as a violinist and also conducting, you know, university orchestra and doing Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra just became a little bit too much. But anyway, that's my background. So I came to Eau Claire in 1991. And then actually, this is my 30th anniversary season with the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. So then, when I recall, you know, our path, actually, the last 30 years, it's actually we came a long way. And now we really enjoy playing in the new performing arts center. It's called Pablo Center. It opened 2018. Yeah, before that, actually, yeah, we always wanted to perform with in a very nice hall, but we didn't have a luxury. However, musicians and also the community really, you know, we patiently, you know, keep going, you know, what we can do. So then our community really understood the importance of, I mean, right, building a new performing arts center. So then, yeah, we are so happy to perform in a very nice concert hall right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, in Wausau, the conductor of the Wausau Symphony Orchestra is Dan Larson. He's also an educator. He has directed pit orchestras for community productions in central Wisconsin as well, and has a career of his own playing out and about here and there as well. Dan, welcome. It's so good to see you. Talk about how long you've been directing the orchestra in Wausau and how you got involved in that.
Yes, well, I was teaching in the Wausau School District for many years. I did choral and general music education, but always loved symphonic orchestra. My mother was a violinist, and we had a very eclectic record collection growing up. And so just hearing different orchestral music was just, you know, a pastime when mom and dad were busy. She was at board meetings and dad was busy with meetings and so forth. But yes, Pat Miles was directing Wausau Symphony. And when he resigned from that position, there was an opening and I applied for the job. And this was back in 2004. So I've been at this for 20 years. And not being a violinist myself, I relied heavily on my concert master or now concert mistress for, you know, clues and tips and how to help the string section. Then just using my music sensibilities of, you know, how are we expressing what we need to express. I did take a conductor's workshop in Iowa City under Dr. Jones and just really gave some great tips about just saying, you know, my job as the conductor is we prepare for the concert. And then on the day of the performance, I just get out of their way and I give the musicians what they need and give them the cues and so forth and just let them make the music. And so I would often tell my general music classes in middle school grades saying it's like the head coach on the sidelines. You know, the coach isn't the one out there throwing the passes and making the tackles. They're playing the game and the coach is giving them encouragement to say, yes, this is what we should do. No, stop doing that. but just have really gotten to love the genre of orchestral music. And we've really grown also with the ability. Our string section has just improved over the years. And it's just a joy to get up on the podium and just give them the downbeat and listen to them play.
Also joining us today is Tessa Taylor. She is the executive director of the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra in Stevens Point. She can take us through the nuts and bolts of organizing and managing the performances we see on stage. Tessa is also a French horn player in her own right. Tessa, thanks for being here. Talk about how you got involved in the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra.
Yes, thanks for having me. Yes, very exciting. I am born and raised in the Appleton area, actually New London. And a big part of the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra was brought about through New London, Wapaka, Stevens Point areas. I was living in Kansas City at the time and decided to move back to Wisconsin in 2022. Found the role that was open as executive director and changed routes, moved here, and I've really enjoyed being back. We are the only Central Wisconsin-based professional orchestra, and so we are very excited about that going into our 75th season, our 75th year, and just how far our musicians travel to perform with us. I've gotten to know a lot of individuals, a lot of musicians, and a lot of business supporters in the area, and it's truly remarkable to see how many people come together to really make the concerts happen, really, really approach the organization as a nonprofit entity, a entity that brings a lot of power and live entertainment to the community.
How far do musicians travel to play in the group?
We have musicians that come from Madison area, Fox Valley area, and Green Bay that play in the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra.
Wow. So they're making quite a trek to be committed to this season. That's incredible. That's incredible.
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
It is.
I want to ask you a little bit, each of you, about your organization, your group specifically, how many players you have and whether they're amateurs or professionals. Nobu, who plays in your symphony? Is it community members? Is it professional musicians? Do you have a mix?
Basically, our orchestra actually focused on our local musicians. That's our biggest kind of vision, that we provide the great symphonic experience to our local musicians. But at the same time, like our 1 hour kind of radius, like Rice Lake or those area, people still drive to join us. But basically, our musicians are from Eau Claire, and many people are just some music teachers in the public school or retired professional musicians. Actually, we have a couple of those people too. So, but in a way, basically, we kind of call us, it's a kind of a local community orchestra. We don't have to call it amateur, but yeah, so it's not like a professional orchestra. So, you try to hire people from Chicago, Madison, or Minneapolis. We cannot really afford to pay. But that's our strength, because we really attract a lot of local musicians to play. And it's my pleasure to really work with a happy, aspiring musicians from our neighborhood in a way.
Dan, talk a little bit about Wausau, the Wausau Symphony. Where do you draw your musicians from, and do they have to audition to try out? How does that all work?
We do we have mostly local people that again continue to play their instrument. Some of them are current or retired music teachers, but sometimes it might be a vocalist who also plays the flute, or somebody who might be a keyboardist, maybe a piano teacher, but they also happen to play a bassoon. The local membership, and then also with a neighbor like Stevens Point and Central Wisconsin Symphony, some of those members also manage to spare time to play in some of our programs, and as well as the organization just south of us. So we have some people coming in from the Marshfield area, from the Stevens Point, Merrill area. They make a trek as well, but it's a volunteer organization. The big thing is we did start to audition especially our string players, because when I first took over, there just didn't seem to be any boundaries. Like if you could hold the fiddle, that was basically
you could play.
Okay, then play what you can. And and so my first concert master really, really helped me and assisted me, saying, for the music that I wanted to program, he says, we really need to have string players that can do first and third position and some, and that's the minimum. And they've got to be able to do that. And so we did hold my, those first 5 years, my some auditions, and probably about out of 8 or 10 people that auditioned, we accepted two because we wanted it to get better. And then because the string section got sounded better, we started to attract, without auditioning, some people that had the experience that could really help. So we have a wonderful concert mistress from Chile, just outside of Marshfield. And she's also a Scottish fiddler, but just she plays with CWSO, and she's a just a wonderful, wonderful violinist and really leads the section well. So yeah, and our oldest member, he just we did a jazz piece that I just composed for our last concert featuring Wisconsin musicians. And Mr. Louis Pratt, age 92, did a jazz blues solo on his oboe. And it was delightful. It was just really incredible. And he's been a significant member of the group for, gosh, I don't know how
Oh,
many years,
forever.
but
Forever.
it's
When
just
I was
been,
17, I was
yeah.
playing in the symphony and he was playing oboe. So, yes, then, and I'm
That's right.
55 now. So that's been a long time ago. So, well, Tessa, do you play a role in recruiting musicians for the CWSO? Is that part of your job or is that something that's outside of your realm?
A little. I would say a majority of the CWSO are current professors at on campus at UWSP in the music area. Some of them live local and some of them live further away. Then, for recruitment purposes, we really focus on local and those musicians and who they know. We did have auditions last year for two positions, and our horn player is coming from Minnesota. But that's
Wow.
because he got the role and he got the part, and he drives over from Minnesota. But his sister is also in the orchestra, lives in Marshfield. So it's amazing how the connections can really get those new younger or new retired adults that really want to join something that's super powerful.
Definitely. And the typical season for your symphony, is it usually fall through spring? Tessa, is that what it's like for CWSO?
Yes. We have four main concerts: October, December, February, and April. So those are our four, and then we throw in some educational outreach initiatives and education concerts in March that we have during the week. But our four main concert season is fall to spring.
No, but
Correct.
what about your season? Is it also fall through spring?
Right. Basically, we have September, October, December, and then March and May.
Okay.
Five.
Okay. How many concerts for Wausau? I can't recall, Dan.
Well, we had divided up when John Borowitz was a professor of music and at Stevens Point, he was directing, and he came up with dividing the group to feature a wind ensemble as well. So in the back in the 80s, we had the Wausau Symphony and then we had the Wausau Symphonic Band. So now with that division, so we have usually one concert for orchestra in the fall, one concert for the band. Then it was we get to middle of winter, usually January, February-ish. Again, one orchestra, one band. And then now we've been joining forces for an end of the year concert at the Rothschild Pavilion. And that's become a really nice event. It's a free event, but it's a fundraiser. So there's silent auction. It's always at the end of April on a Sunday afternoon. And it features both the band and the orchestra. So each group plays three concerts then.
You're hearing Dan Larson, Tessa Taylor, and Nobu Yasuda, our guest today on Route 51, delving into the world of local symphony organizations and their role in the community. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. I'm Shireen Seewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back on Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shireen Seward, along with our guests Dan Larson, Nobu Yasuda, and Tessa Taylor, picking up our conversation about local symphonies and what it's like to be part of these performing groups. So, Tessa, tell me what is exactly the role of an executive director? What do you do? What's a day in the life like for Tessa?
Wow, that's a loaded question.
Right.
similar to Chippewa Valley, we only have a few staff members and we wear multiple hats. So as an executive director, a main part of my job is a lot of the fundraising, development, and marketing of the organization. I am out there shaking hands with people, networking events. I am on the radio doing things like this. I'm talking about our upcoming concerts. I'm also working with private donors and working with foundations and grants to have those funding come into the organization for meeting our budget goals. I also am in charge of and also manage our board of directors. So we typically have around 10 to 15 board of directors that are making those decisions, helping us guide the organization at large. And help me kind of figure out what we're doing day to day, season to season, and event to event. We also have part-time staff here in the office, an office manager and an education coordinator. And usually each semester, about two interns from the university or mid-state tech or those areas. For additional support. So, as we continue to grow, we have just taken over our youth orchestra program here in town that associates a whole nother staff, all sorts of different individuals. And we have about 80 student members of that organization as well. So, now being a parent organization, there is another piece to CWSO as of last May. So, it's almost been a year of taking over that program, which is high on our radar, and to make sure we are recruiting for that from the youth standpoint and to really furthering our mission to enrich, engage, and educate through the power and performance of live music. And whether that's involving more youth, more adults, more young adults, and more professionals to the organization at large. That is a huge goal of mine, the board of directors, and staff here at CWSO.
Great. Thanks for that explanation. It sounds like there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that probably we don't really realize when we're sitting in the audience and enjoying that beautiful music on stage. You don't realize how many people it takes to actually make that happen. I'm really curious. Years ago, the Wausau Symphony would pay all of its performers. That was a long, long time ago, and then they got rid of that. I mean, do you think, Dan, that it's hard to get people to play for free? I mean, or are they playing for the love of it? What draws them in if they're not getting paid?
Anytime there's, I have been doing this the last few concerts over the last few years. I'll ask the people who have been in symphony 10 years, 20 years, and of course we mentioned Louis, he'll stand up and he's the last one who's been in there the longest. And I'll describe these people as some of the busiest people in our community, because just like any other community that needs members to play for pit orchestras, for other, just other instrumental needs of a classical piece and or local church choir featuring something for Reformation Sunday or for Christmas. They're playing everywhere. We recently performed the Vivaldi Gloria with a new community choir in Wausau on Palm Sunday, and many of our string players said, "Oh, sure, I'll play." And that was another Sunday afternoon that was all, we were all doing it for gratis because they just love to play the music and just be together, and it really is good. With the Wausau Symphony, we had a paid executive director, and then that went away. So the conductor gets a salary, the concert mistress gets a salary, and then whatever we have to pay for rental, and we just have the budget there, that we just managed to put that together for each concert. And whoever the conductors are, whatever we have in our files, or if we reach out to other community orchestras, we might call Chippewa or over in Green Bay, and just say, or CWSO, do you have this in your files for orchestra? Would we be able to borrow or rent that from you? And that's how we maintain. So.
I want to talk a little bit about the music, actually. Nobu, I'm curious how you choose the music that works for your audience. I mean, you must put a lot of thought into what audiences want to hear and what your group is able to perform. Talk us through that process, how you choose every year what you're going to perform.
Yes, actually, that's basically my main kind of responsibility, right? To provide very exciting programming for musicians and also audience alike. I mean, first of all, our mission statement says that we provide extraordinary symphonic experience to our local musicians. And also, the second tier is basically we also provide a symphonic, great symphonic experience to our audience. So, like for example, at the March concert, we had just performed the Bruckner Symphony Number 7. This is the really, really heavy stuff. However, it was one of my vision. After 30 years or so, basically, I kind of built the energy to even perform that kind of a mighty, symphony. I mean, I know usually people are like, Bruckner, oh, it's too long, it's so boring. No, but our musicians really felt incredibly fulfilled after they performed. And the audience also came to me, not like, oh, that's a great concert. They came to me like, wow, do you know the difference? They just couldn't even express with the words, just they just felt something deep, and they said, wow, the time went so fast. I mean, so to me, it's not just the kind of entertaining music, but some music has a power to really inspire musicians. And also that music sends a great kind of a message to audience. That's kind of a thing. I know I'm kind of talking kind of vague, but that's my kind of mission. But at the same time, we have to also bring, I mean, develop the kind of vibe of performing those music from even performing. Sometimes, we do a movie music, we do like a Hottest to the Planet, and then also we do pops music. So we of course, we try to reach out to the kind of community members that who usually don't think the classical music is for them. But we reach out, and then they come to our concerts, and then they experience this. Wow. So they are like, wow, we didn't know this kind of music is that great. So that's kind of my right vision.
That sounds wonderful. Dan, I see you nodding your head too. I'm curious too about your process, and I wonder too, is it difficult sometimes to find repertoire that's challenging enough, but at the same time manageable for musicians, some of whom have varied musical ability?
Oh yes, definitely. And so for instance, we got an audience request concert coming up end of April, and I've always wanted we did an arrangement of, and that's one of your outs. If you have a piece that really is just too difficult, then you go to an arranger that might have watered down a little bit of a classic piece, and you can get by with that, but it's just not as satisfying, So we actually are doing the William Tell overture. The and they're for real, and it's in a real bear of a key, and the musicians are very excited about working on that. And it features the cello section in the beginning. Well, all of a sudden now I find some of our cellists are not available for this final concert. So then we just have to cut to a certain part. And so we still won't be able to do the entire overture, but it will be a familiar overture that people recognize as the Lone Ranger theme. But again, I agree with so much of what he said, because we continue to be educators, and we're educating our audiences as we go through. And I think when you do those big pieces, you do a Tchaikovsky symphony or Bruckner, you're the way you present it, and I taught middle school for 27 years, and to try to keep the attention of sixth, seventh, eighth graders has always been a challenge, and I think I did it fairly successfully. Yeah, there were some hard days, of course, but if you can reach them with, a bit of humor or some kind of present day example to say, and this is what Beethoven might have been thinking about, or this is what might have been putting forth in the music, or the music might remind you of X, Y, and Z. Then it kind of puts a little picture in their head before they actually listen to it, and it sets the stage for what I say, you're sneaking the spinach into their meal, and they end up the audience ends up broadening their horizons and appreciating it even more. So
I love that, sneaking the spinach into their meal, because there are those pieces that are absolutely favorites that are going to go over really well with audiences, but then you put in something that's really challenging, and you might see some audience members like Whoa, what is this? So, I mean, Tessa and Stephen's point, how do you guys go about finding music that challenges your audiences and really furthers their understanding of music?
Yeah, between our conductor Andy Moran and I, and before my time, it was always something we put out to understand our audience. So honestly, we had an audience voted piece as well, Dan, and we asked the audience, vote on your favorite piece of these five that we could perform. We are playing the finale from William Tell, so that's kind of coming up this upcoming week. And we also asked, what other pieces would you like to hear from the CWSO? So we have tons of comments of what our audience would like for us to bring to Stephen's point. You know, they've heard the Mahlers, they've heard the Bruckners, like they've heard these pieces in Chicago, Milwaukee, Madison, but can Stephen's Point pull it off? Can we get it in our radar to put in our season? So Andy and I have talked back and forth of what we see this next 76 season, what we feel we can perform, what our overall theme is. Usually that leads our conversation of what our season entails. Being our 76th season launching this July, we just have a lot of big impactful pieces in mind, and also slowly introducing some more pops into this area. I know Eau Claire, you guys have mentioned you do a little bit more pops over there. Fox Valley does a little bit more pops. Stevens Point is a little bit more traditional. We have found out our audience really wants to see that classical symphonic music because they would have to travel over an hour in every direction to see that or go see those performances. So we have not introduced as much pops, and I think our goal this upcoming season is to have that slowly introduction of a pops oriented holiday concert. Slash kid friendly concert that really brings in the entire family and opens that avenue to more audience members, more non-traditional audience members, and just making sure that everyone can hear and listen and understand like our area and our community and what we bring to the area with our live music.
Tessa, you said the word theme, and that made me wonder. I mean, does every concert or season have a specific theme that you work around? I mean, is there something cohesive about it?
To my knowledge, I've only planned about two seasons now, but before that, yes, it was more of a theme that you put some repertoire, some major pieces of repertoire to. So this season, Jubilation for our 75th, it was called Jubilation, and some major pieces that we're performing even in our season-ending concert here in 2 weeks is Tchaikovsky Four. We're doing a cello concerto, Shostakovich Cello Concerto number 1, and really leading us to end the season strong. And the jubilation is just the over entire theme of start to finish. How do we start strong, lead to the two middle concerts, and end strong as well for a 75th like full core season? We started our season with actually De Meistersinger was our first concert piece 75 years ago. So we started our October concert with that theme, with that in mind, telling our audience that we've performed this, our first concert, 1948, and we're bringing it back to you to launch our 75th season. And now we're just trying to finish our April concert strong with those two main pieces, an audience selected mystery piece, we called it, which is the finale to William Tell Overture, and introducing a world premiere piece that one of our musicians composed for us.
Oh, wonderful. And so you have somebody who had composed something for you. Dan, you mentioned something earlier about Wisconsin composers and incorporating that into performance. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And as for themes, even though it's not been a consistent yearly orchestra experience, roots go back in Wausau to about 1898. So we've been celebrating this as our 125th season because I was a string instructor that moved from the East Coast and began teaching strings to some of the ladies on a Tuesday afternoon club or a Saturday afternoon club. And that was the roots of the beginnings of the Wassa Symphony tradition. So this year it's been celebrating. So we were celebrating the holidays. We haven't done a Christmas concert in many years with the symphony, and I really miss that. Just playing Leroy Anderson's Sleigh Ride is just a tradition for me. But there's also some classic pieces, the Polonaise from the Christmas Eve Suite, Rimsky-Korsakov, and some of the classic pieces that are associated with the holidays. So we were celebrating Wisconsin composers. And again, then we were celebrating, or we'll be celebrating, our audience requests and traditions in the Rothschild. But yes, when we go around, one of the great ideas when you hit an October concert is you can do something called Classics from the Crypt. And there's a ton of classical music out there that has been associated with scary movies and Halloween themes. And things like that, and so that's kind of, oh, I've heard that before in this commercial for the Goodwill, and buy your Halloween costumes. And yeah, it's a famous orchestral piece by Camille Saint-Saëns, or so you can hook the audience in with different themes like that.
No, but what about you in Chippewa Valley? Do you do any kind of themes, or is each concert just kind of a standalone?
No, yes, we do have a theme. So I'm, of course, I don't always don't want to be tied with, too specific theme. So I want to be open. However, after I decide the kind of main piece, then I talk to many people about, so what do you think about this kind of atmosphere of this piece? And I kind of come up with other. Yeah. So definitely, especially for a marketing reason, we always have theme.
Okay, you're listening to Nobu Yasuda, Tessa Taylor, and Dan Larson on Route 51, and we are exploring the world of local symphony orchestras in Wausau, Eau Claire, and Stevens Point. We'll be continuing that discussion in just a moment. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back on Route 51, I'm Shereen Seward. Our guests today are Dan Larson, Nobu Yasuda, and Tessa Taylor, representing symphony orchestras in Stevens Point, Eau Claire, and Wausau on Wisconsin Public Radio. I have to wonder, I feel like interest in live classical music has waned over the years. We see symphonies in other communities like Green Bay and others throughout the state and throughout the nation that have just not really been able to continue. They have not been able to survive. So I'm going to talk about how your organizations have been able to withstand the challenges and stay in business, basically, after so many years. Dan, let's start with you.
Well, I think we've cut costs over the years, and we had talked about how many years ago the musicians would get. I had a concert master once that he would say, "Yeah, we get paid to play, but it's like turkey sandwich money." So they would basically get a check for mileage. They might get an $18 check or something, but you multiply that by 35, 40 people, or 50, 60 people, depending on the size of your orchestra, and that eats a lot out of the bank. So, being able to play for free, cutting the costs there, but you still have to pay rent for your halls, services, things like that. There's some salaried positions. And so the people who, are donors, the people that are behind the scenes doing grant writing, whether it's a board member or an executive director, that's a ton of work. And you really, really rely on the funding of your community foundations, your community organizations, to keep these nonprofits alive. And we're just so thankful for the people that are able to donate. You can't just do it with ticket sales. And one of the other costs that we cut with Wausau Symphony and Band performances is we want people to bring their kids. So anybody under 18 is free. And so we just have an admission charge for adults and seniors, and we just made that free of charge. If you're under 18, come and check out the symphony.
Tessa, what about in Stevens Point? How important is it for you to be mining that donor base and really getting that funding going?
extremely important, especially as we had a regular season finally back after the pandemic in 2022. We were first being back performing our core season at our Century Theater location. We were at a different venue, fortunately enough, both free of charge, although we do pay for those helping and assisting in setup and teardown of those concerts. Something we really pushed on as we came back and before my time was our heavily focused grant writing. We did receive some higher grants to get us through the COVID pandemic time. However, now that we're not in that time, those grants are not available. So we have to keep finding and searching and digging for new opportunities depending on our reach in our area. And that is a big area of focus for me. That is a main part of my job as executive director of the CWSO, as well as making sure we're connecting with businesses and sponsors in the area, those who sponsor us year to year, those who sponsor and put a program ad in our program each concert, and those who are able to give to us for our smaller chamber concerts in the summertime or our core season. Those primary focuses is just how we get by. Something I like to put out there as an audience member to understand this is only about 20% of our ticket sales is allocated in our budget. The rest, 80%, is donations, grants, and fundraising at large. 20% is ticket sales. I would say a majority of each of our four concerts, that full total ticket revenue is only about 20 to 30% of our total budget. And it's hard to say that, but I want it to be a reality for most organizations who didn't make it during COVID or weren't able to come back to normal or weren't able to come back at all. Without that, even though that was only a 20 or 30% of the budget, now when you have no other income and no other, donor supporters, and you're not having any events to tell them to come to and why they should donate, that was a huge issue for our organization, is to try to let them know we are still here. We plan to still be here for our 75th anniversary, and here we are. But 2, 3, 4 years ago, trying to apply for that funding with the unknown was very difficult. And with our conductor, Andy Moran, and him leading us through that time, our previous executive director, and as Dr. Pat Miles was retiring in 2019, right before COVID, a lot of change happened, a lot of difficulties at the internal staff point of the CWSO really made us change and understand our area, our focus, and repivot with a strategic plan.
Nobu, what do you think it is about your organization in Chippewa Valley that keeps it going, despite all these challenges that other symphonies are having?
I think it just to me, I mean, because I don't have to actually worry about, I mean, Tess actually, she really, I mean, summarized all the problems, also the right, how our organization actually financially face. So that's what it is. But as I don't have to actually deal with that as a music director. To me, it is more about building a team. What I mean is that really excited about, I mean, the musicians actually, they are part of the team. Of course, audience is part of the team, and also business people, community people. What I try to say is that we started paying musicians about 15 or 20 years ago, but they are not even receiving a minimum wage. So, but anyway, but they play, from their love of music. So they are excited about playing the music. So that's kind of, that we have to build that team, right? Right. And audience, actually, community member. So they, we have to actually kind of let them know that we exist and we do a good job. And there has to be kind of excited about having orchestra in our community. So there, I'm sure that they feel very proud of having the orchestra in the community. And also another team actually is right, people who support financially. I mean, they're really believing on what we do. So as a music director, I try to kind of send this message, my at least my passion for music. That's my mission, right? Because I'm not really a politician or a business person. I only thing I can do is just I you know send out share my passion of music with everybody in the community.
Dan, how, as audiences have changed over the years, obviously tastes have changed as well. How have you worked to adapt to a changing audience as you're planning your programs and you're planning your music for the future? What do you think about?
I feel if I'm looking at a score of a new piece, something that's been sitting in the files for a while and it was written in the 60s, it's not a pop piece, but it's, got some challenging rhythms and things, or might be a descriptive piece like A Night in Mexico or An Afternoon in Quebec or something like that. Variations on a Quaker song. If it has a melody that I find it might be an old folk tune, I always look for these hooks. I figure, whoa, okay, that seemed to be a popular melody, that I learned in school and music classes, and a lot of other people might have had that similar experience. So I'm kind of trying to get a broad connection there. And again, that's where I step in and do a little introduction to a piece that might be totally brand new. I might even just come right out and say, well, this is one of those pieces that if the notes sound wrong, that actually is right. We haven't really done a lot of, atonal type things, but there have been some pieces that had some challenging rhythms and challenging harmonies, even to our players. And they're saying, is that right? Yep, that's right. Let's just hit it forcefully, be bold, and play with great confidence, and and just be aggressive with it. And again, that kind of it continues to broaden the audience experience and the musician experience as well.
Nobu, I'm curious, when you are on stage and you are directing for a performance, do you feel it when an audience is really enthralled, when they're really loving what they're hearing? What is that energy like for you?
Yeah, I definitely feel that actually. I mean, I'm in the best place. In front of me is a wonderful musicians. Behind me is also wonderful listeners, I mean audience. I definitely feel this connect, especially you just mentioned about the power of live performance, live concert, live music, right? Because you are in this space, big space. Musicians are performing right there, right now, right here. And the audience are just kind of taking their journey with us. I mean, it's a wonderful feeling. I definitely I'm enjoying the moment of performing with the musicians. And after the performance, I mean, quite often actually we get the standing ovation. I mean, I just, I'm one of the musicians now on stage, and they look at them. They are really cheering at us. I mean, it's a joy, really.
Dan, what does it feel like for you when you first walk out on stage? The lights are dim, the everybody has tuned up, it's time to go. You walk out on stage. Do you still get nervous after all these years, or do you have
Oh,
zero butterflies anymore?
I'm excited. I'm excited. I just love the experience. And yeah, and again, our community audiences, they're our home team crowd. They just are there to root for us right from the get-go before we even play a single note. They're just such wonderful, wonderful people to have there. And again, if we're doing some things like we did in our Christmas concert, it was something about all sorts of bell songs. So it was, I heard the bells on Christmas Day and everything. And then we ended up with a samba version of Jingle Bells. And I
Fun.
couldn't help but just I dance when I conduct a little bit. So I get a, get a kick out of that. People get a kick out of it. And because it was a samba, I actually, and having years of community theater experience, there was a little drum fill. And I took off my tuxedo jacket and put on a Hawaiian shirt
Oh.
and just kind of, got that on there. And then the trombones began their jingle bell rhythmic melody there. It was just a lot of fun. So I'll pull things out. Or like when we were at years ago at the Grand Theater, we were doing the Sorcerer's Apprentice and one of my first concerts. And I had the crew at the Grand hang a bunch of brooms. And so before we even played a note, I said, oh, wait. And then we just did a little magical cue. and the brooms came down, and then we played The Sorcerer's Apprentice. You know, it
Very
didn't take
fun.
much to just add a little spice to it. But it was, you know, and then that was when the orchestra sounding better now than it did back 20 years ago. So I think it helped forgive, you know, any of the clinkers that might have happened during that piece. But it's always been just a joy and just fun. You know, I agree entirely with
Yeah.
all the other comments about that, because it's just uplifting.
Tessa, you work all behind the scenes, and your work is so much of the preparation and making sure that everything goes smoothly. And so I'm wondering about how you feel when you're sitting in the audience or you're sitting in the wings and the curtain comes up and here we go. Do you feel nervous? Do you feel relief? I mean, are you constantly worrying about what's going to happen?
Each concert is very different depending on the time of year. I would definitely say, you know, during the winter concerts, we want to make sure people are getting there on time due to weather. When the curtains open, I'm the first person who goes and steps out and announces things. So that's always usually something I do. And then concert master goes out, and then our conductor. And so I feel all sorts of emotion. We want to see a full audience. We want to see Century Theater completely full with our capacity about just shy of 700 seats. We want to see that. And if we don't, is it like, oh, well, we should have sold more, or oh my gosh, we have most of this full. Like, we have not had a full this full of an audience since before COVID as well. So we're very thrilled to have whoever is in the audience there, but we also want it to see it as full as possible, and the energy of obviously our wonderful season subscription holders, those who are there every single concert, love to see us perform. And then seeing all the new faces out there, family members, people who travel a little farther distance to come see us, because they saw an advertisement or they wanted to join their family. But it just really depends. We like to have our October concert start really strong. There's really not as many weather procurements. And then obviously for April, you never know what you're going to get. Obviously, there's a snowstorm today. And this concert ending our season, it will be definitely a sense of relievement. And to know that we've gotten to this point, we have a wonderful guest cellist joining us, to see her joining us for the first time and seeing what her first impressions are of us as well. That would be fantastic.
And that concert is what date?
Our concert, Russian Masters concert, is Saturday, April 13th, and Sunday, April 14th, here in Stevens Point at Century Theater, 7:30 p.m. on Saturday and 4 p.m. on Sunday. And we have some amazing pieces in store. Most of our concerts you can leave within 2 hours, so we try to keep them buttoned up with intermission 2 hours.
All right, wonderful. And Dan, what's coming up? You've got a concert coming up at the Rothschild Pavilion, I understand. Yes?
Right. It's been a wonderful fundraiser for us. It's a free concert, but there's going to be a silent auction. You can bring your own picnic lunch there. It's indoors, so the weather's inclement. You know, you get weather like this sometimes in late April,
Sure.
but it's indoors at the pavilion at another historic site in the central Wisconsin area. And there usually is a food truck of some sort there too, so you can purchase food as well. We start at 4 o'clock, and both the symphonic band and the orchestra will share a program. We'll do a program where we're celebrating with our Wisconsin audiences. And so we're doing some featured, a lot of film music was requested. So we'll be doing some Pirates of the Caribbean and some John Williams pieces. But also William Tell Overture was specifically requested. So, and that's a very, very difficult piece, but my musicians are really excited about providing that particular piece for that. So that's going to be on April 28th, Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. And again, about a 2 hour experience. And you know, come and enjoy the concert, have some good food.
Sounds wonderful. Nobu, what is up for Chippewa Valley next?
Okay, our last concert of the season is actually on May 11th, Saturday at the Pablo Center at 7:30. We celebrate this concert with also the Chippewa Valley Festival Choir. It's a local choir we just created. So we performed one piece. It was also audience requested, also musician requested, Beethoven Symphony Number 9. So the
Nice.
theme of the concert is the Ode to Joy. That's it. Yeah, we are very, very looking forward to it.
Well, I
Many
love
people.
it. I love it. Thank you so much for joining us, all three of you. It's been an absolute pleasure to go behind the scenes at the symphony, and just thanks again for joining us. This is Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Once more, a sincere thanks to our guests, Tessa Taylor, Nobu Yasuda, and Dan Larson. Ezra Wall and Joey Ratch Kramer assisted in producing this program. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program as well as our previous programs at wpr.org/route51 and on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.